Our next guest on Downtown has been making people laugh for many, many years with her stand-up comedy. She's the host of a terrific podcast, No One Listens to Paula Poundstone, plus author of a book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. You hear her on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR, and she's coming to Maine for two performances later this month at Jonathan's in Ogunquit. We're pleased to welcome Paula Poundstone back to Downtown. Let's start out. I ask you if you have can help us out with any advice, Paula, anything you can share that can help us on our way.
Oh, I got advice. Keep your cat senses in single digits.
that's always a good idea. Great advice.
Yeah, it is. That's my cat, Clue, sneezing. They are a full-time job. I have 14, so I'm five over the limit, really, census-wise. Here's a piece of advice. Whenever you find something small, like a screw or a little piece of metal or something that you can't really identify, tape it to a cabinet door in the kitchen.
I like that.
What happens is somebody will walk by it and go, oh, that's where that is. And if you just throw it away, then the refrigerator door falls off.
Now, that's kind of the same advice I heard you share on your podcast about taping your kids' meds and things of that sort to yourself.
Yes, I did do that. I'm a big advocate of adhesive strips. I used to tape my kids' meds to my shirt in the morning so that when I was running around and I had to, I got up before they did, and I'm running around getting everybody ready and doing my thing. Eventually, somebody says to me, what's that on your shirt? And I go, oh, my gosh, yeah. And then it works the same if you have the phone call that you have to make and you keep forgetting. Just tape it to your shirt. Tape the phone number to your shirt. And somebody somewhere will say, well, what is that? And you go, oh, that's right, I have to call that person. I'm very big on adhesive strips.
This is good advice. It's usable advice. Now, Paula, the last time you were on with us, it's been a couple of years. It was just about 2 years ago, as a matter of fact, and it was, of course, an election year, and we talked quite a bit about the Trump phenomenon, and I think we both assumed
and
at the time.
And I was sure it meant nothing.
Yeah, we both thought that. Well, everybody thought that. How'd that work out for us?
Oh, my gosh. I'm still throwing up a couple times each morning. I'm applying cold compresses. That's my next advice. I don't know. Every morning I get up and I expect to see Tweedledum and Tweedledee beside my bed. We've been in Alice in Wonderland land for quite a while now, but I don't know. We'll see.
You travel the country.
Some good advice.
Yeah.
If Mueller is behind you in traffic, pull over. Let him go.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah.
I want him to use his time the very best he can. I don't want him, if he's in front of you with the 7-Eleven line, getting some snacks or something, tap him on the shoulder and say, you go, I got this.
Or even if you saw the picture last week, even if you're at the airport and you notice the gentleman sitting comfortably in his suit reading the paper, not being impatient, is Robert Mueller. And then you see, oh, look, there's Don Jr. in his camo hat on his cell phone up at the counter wondering why he hasn't been seated yet. You get those two to switch position, you get Mueller on that plane.
That's right. Yeah. What a freakish coincidence, huh?
Everything about our world is freakish right now.
Small town. I don't know where they were.
It is very bizarre indeed. So as somebody who travels the country, do you find that we are as divided a nation as it seems we are at times?
Well, I don't have a bird's eye on that because, you're right, I work all around the country, but the people come to see me, and I'm so lucky. I have great audiences that come to see me everywhere I am, and most of them are familiar with me already, and so it's not like, you know what I mean? So they already know, and by the way, Republicans are welcome at my shows, as are independents. It's not like I do a show that's sort of all, but But there was a certain flavor, I suppose, of, hold on, my other phone's ringing. You know who it is?
I don't.
I'm sure it's my manager who doesn't know my schedule. some of my beliefs, be it social or political, are expressed during my show. And so people who really don't like that simply wouldn't come, for the most part. And so I really am, you know, my manager always used to say to me, like, if it's going to work like Kansas, you know, she'd be like, oh, that's a red state. And I'd say, you know what? I have the best time in Kansas. Because it's not like it's all people of one way of thinking.
Right.
In fact, we're pretty mixed. And maybe it's the majority is there. But so people come to see me. It's a little bit, when I work in a red state, it's a little bit, I think, like when they made The Wizard of Oz and they hired little people from around the country. And they had never been with people like themselves in that way before. And so when they got together, it was just a joyous free-for-all. In fact, they had orgies. That doesn't happen at my shows. Let me just put in that disclaimer. But, yeah, I think it's a little bit like that.
So does that make you like the mayor of Munchkin Land?
I am the mayor of Munchkin Land.
That is fantastic. We're talking to Paula Poundstone. She'll be back in Maine for two shows at Jonathan's on a Gun Quit August 17th and 18th because a shrewd veteran performer that you are, you always know to come to Maine at the absolute perfect time of year.
I love Maine. Well, you know what the truth is? I go to multiple places in Maine multiple times a year, and I think I think I feel the best when I go during mud season. Because I just, you know, then it feels like a service, you know, it just feels like, you know, gives people, yes, you know, laughter is so important. It's so healthy. And during mud season, I think it's it's a necessity. It should be in your survival kit.
We need our Paula time here in Maine.
Cracking teeth, maybe, or something in your survival kit. But so, yeah, but I feel very lucky to get to go to Jonathan's in the summer because it is gorgeous there.
We're talking to Paula Poundstone, and if you haven't heard it yet, you can check out her brand-new podcast titled, who came up with the title? I love it. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Me.
That's fantastic.
I just used my life experience. I drew upon my life experience to come up with the title. It's really been fun. It's my partner on the show is Adam Felber, with whom I did another podcast last year called Live from the Poundstone Institute. And the Institute ran into some, endowment problems.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so we're doing Live from the Now we're doing Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and I met Adam originally doing Wait, Don't Tell Me. And we are good friends in real life and just have a hoot, thinking of things we think are funny and saying them. And we call it a comedy advice podcast. The truth is, and the people that we have on to talk to us are indeed, knowledgeable in their fields.
Mm.
And so if you go away from listening to the podcast, you go, oh my gosh, I didn't think of that. That was very funny. Well, at least you go away with some real information. But I'm hoping I'm hoping that never happens.
I don't think it will. I think people are pretty sharp here. You've also, since last we talked, you've come out with a book. We'll call it still relatively new. Came out last year, the totally unscientific study of the search for human happiness in the world of fake news. You're now a fake scientist. I think that's wonderful.
I am a fake scientist. But I, of course, admit right up front that it's totally unscientific method. What I did was, my book is a series of experiments doing things that I or other people thought would make me happy, and every chapter is written as an experiment with the conditions and the variables and the hypothesis and the field notes, and the quantitative and qualitative observations. But for me, the real question wasn't whether I would enjoy doing something, because I have a handle on what I enjoy. The question was, what could I do that would give me a bounce so that when I returned, to the slings and arrows of my regular life, I had some gas in the tank still. So the analysis part of each chapter is the story of my regular life, raising a house full of kids and animals and being a stand-up comic and just being stuck being me 24 hours a day. So in the end, it took 7 years to write for a variety of reasons, one being that the experiments sometimes were lengthy. I have two chapters on getting organized because that takes forever. In the end, it's number one job is to be funny, and I think it manages that. But it's the story of raising my kids, and it's an imperfect story.
Speaking of kids, what did you want to do when you were a kid, and when did stand-up comedy become something you consider? But what did you think you might be doing as a grown-up person out there in the world?
Well, when the first sentence of the last paragraph of the summary letter written by my kindergarten teacher in May of 1965 says, I have enjoyed many of Paul's humorous comments about our activities. And I was familiar with the idea of, being a comedian. I mean, I remember people using the word comedian to me before I even knew what the word meant. So for a long time, I didn't want to be a comic actress at one point when I was younger. But, as I moved through the depressing teenage years, what I thought I would do shifted. When I was 19, I went to down to Disney World because I wanted to be a bear in the Disney World parade. And I also had a theory that I could live in the Small World exhibit. So my grasp on reality has vacillated over the years. At one point I thought I would work my way up from table bussing to managing a restaurant, but the truth is I probably wouldn't have been very good at that, although I was a gifted table busser because I have OCD, and that makes... that makes for some powerful table cleaner.
Well, yeah, attention to detail right there.
Exactly, yes. I very much enjoyed bussing tables and still do in my own home. Oops, that's a cat. In truth, being a comic it was a lifelong dream. And there were times where I dropped the line for a little while here and there, and then I would sort of pick it up again. And really, in the end, it had almost nothing to do with me. In the end, it was time and place. I happened to be living in Boston in 1979 when bussing tables for a living, when the, comedy, when the open mic night circuit surfaced, having nothing to do with me at all. And I went and partook and... and then I worked really hard.
On a serious note, we were all saddened to hear of the passing a little while back of the great Carl Castle. As fans of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, was he as wonderful a person there on the show as he seemed to those of us who listen?
He was terrific. And you know what? He enjoyed the heck out of doing Wait, Wait. In some ways, it was... I don't know at what point he was planning to retire from doing, Morning Edition, but I think he was given some added years, both of work and therefore of life, just really enjoying. I mean, my favorite thing, it was his Britney Spears impression, which, by the way, was really just sort of, a falsetto, nondescript. But it just made me laugh so hard that he was doing it. And because they would have a section of the show, Bill does it now, Bill Curtis. But they have a section of the show called Who's Carl This Time? And they would have him do a quote from someone in the news that week. And I just, you know, for a little while, you know, Britney Spears was sort of out and about a lot, and one kept hearing from her. And it would come up for Carl to do the impression of her, and it just gave me joy. And you know what? It gave him joy.
Paula, I came to parenting a bit late in life. I've got a 4.5-year-old getting ready to start school here in the fall. What do I need to know to prepare myself for this next phase in our adventure?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've got nothing but bad news. It's agonizing. I'm telling you, getting my oldest daughter through school may have been the hardest thing I ever did in my life. And I like to think I've readily faced challenges here and there. At one point in high school, she on her report card, she changed a D in science into a D minus in science into a D plus using a marker. It was hard not to laugh when I talked to her about it. I said, "That's good, honey. That's what the colleges look for, is a high D in the sciences." He said, "You're on your way to MTI. I, you know what? I showed her how to make a D into a B. I said, in the future, you have a little self-respect."
That's a life skill. I like that.
Right? Exactly. You know, if you're going to alter documents, if you're going to alter legal documents, you need to know how. She seems to be beyond that now, and that's good.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, you know what? Here's some advice. No screen devices.
I like that advice a lot. Yes, definitely.
You know what? They cause brain damage. They really disturb the developing brain. They're not good for any of us, is the truth. But there's no reason in the world for a little kid. There's so much to learn, so much to do, so much to look at. In real life, you don't need to be on a flat thing to do it. And they cause so many problems, some of which are just recently getting some acknowledgement. But a lot of parents have known for a long time because we made the mistake. And schools, you know, drank the Kool-Aid for the same reason I did, which is thinking you were giving your kid a leg up.
Right.
And educationally, they're disastrous.
And I always think, too,
tell your school that you don't want your kid on a flat thing.
I feel like we've done kids a disservice, too, because I think back to when I was a kid growing up in the 60s, and some of the best days were days when I didn't have anything to do, and I just had to use my imagination and find a way to entertain myself. And I worry that maybe we've taken that option away from kids today.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And, you know, right now, we have the highest level of depression in like young people, like little kids, that we've had since they've recorded such information. And I was at a conference on this topic not too long ago in Boston, and I heard someone say something that was just brilliant and jarring. And they said, hope requires imagination.
Absolutely.
And so you're right. By taking that opportunity away from them, We're doing untold harm. We're doing harm that we're not even sure about. And it's not always what they're doing, although the screen's bad for them. It's also what they're not doing during that time. You know, when we were kids, I was raised in a small town in Massachusetts. We used to climb trees and read. It was a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now, you know, Ann Sullivan took Helen Keller up in a tree to read. It was a thing. But now you ask a kid, do you ever climb a tree and read? And they look at you like you have two heads. Although I will say that here in California, I find a lot of the branches aren't low enough.
Ah, well, yeah, there's that, too. Plus, it's hard to get your electrical cord up in that tree if you're charging your device at the time.
Charger up in that pine bough.
Exactly. Paula, before we let you go, how do we all deal with the profound depression that comes with the news that the NRA is in serious financial trouble and may not be able to keep their wonderful television network going?
Well, I have to say, David Hogg said the other day, and I realize he's only a boy, but he did say something really interesting, and he might be right. He said he thinks they're putting that out there so that it activates their donors.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, makes sense.
Right? If you felt like they were solvent and you were a supporter, then you wouldn't necessarily get your checkbook out. But if you feel like, you want to tote a machine gun around, and they're struggling, well, you'd want to write them a check. By the way, which of your teachers would you want to see? Looking back, right, Trump's idea about how the teachers carry guns. Which of your teachers do you think was the right one for that job?
Oh yeah, I'm a teacher now, and I've said to my students, do you want me carrying a gun? And the fear washes over their face. Like, God, no. And there are some even worse than you, Mr. Kimball. I'm like, yeah, imagine that one down the hall. I don't name names, of course, but they know who I'm talking about.
We had a history teacher that would write on the board, but he didn't write words. He would maybe write the first letter of what he was saying, and then he would just do these sort of, odd, and they weren't drawings of anything. It was just a sort of weird thing that he did where he moved the chalk around while he was talking as if there was a correlation between the chalk and what he was saying. it was Emperor's New Clothes for years. Everybody thought he was genius. And years later, I started saying to some of my classmates, like, I don't think he really taught anything, do you? And they all kind of went, no.
I walk in the teacher's bathroom on a regular basis and find car keys, glasses, lesson plans.
Oh, right.
Left on the sink or the back of the toilet. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, next year I'll walk in and I'll find somebody's revolver in there because they left it behind.
Their guac.
Yeah.
When I was in elementary school, the teacher's lounge was the most exotic place I could possibly think of. It was... The door to the teacher's lounge was right beside where we lined up for the cafeteria. And of course, it was when the teachers took their breaks. And so the door to the teacher's lounge would open, and because this is 60s, and smoke would blow out of it. And one time a teacher asked me to bring a note to another teacher in the teacher's lounge. And it was like the long walk. I opened the door. I swear I'm not making this up. They had the lights off in there. I think there was candlelight. I'm pretty sure there was a bar. I'm sure they drank. It was like a tiki bar or something in there.
A black light, lava lamps.
Yes, exactly. I don't want them packing heat.
No, that's a bad idea all around. Paula Poundstone returns to Maine for shows August 17th and 18th at Jonathan's in Ogunquit. Paula, it's always a delight to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. It was fun. You take care.
Paula Poundstone here on Downtown.